It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast, our Pirates playback. Pirates lose last night on the road. Watch closer than everybody. It's all 41-28 over losing to the UCF Knights. I'm Dave Richmond here along with Kyle from LaGrange Barber. What's up, man?
What's going on, Dave? How are you?
Doing great. Working on cleaning out my closet right now, my walk-in closet. So I know you want to sing some Eminem now if you want to. You can. If you don't like Billy Ocean or Rick Astley or something, you can go ahead and sing it right now.
No, I that was just for you.
Okay.
Private, for you and Bubba. I will not torture the audience with my stylings of Eminem singing cleaning out my closet in the voice of Rick Astley.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Bubba Rosenbaum, what's up?
Not a whole lot, guys. I'm encouraged by the performance last night, especially after halftime.
Yeah, it was amazing. You know, that team, I don't know what happened, as we said on the No Quarter postgame show last night, but that second half, I've been really impressed with, I want to get your take, guys, on this. I've been really impressed with the coaching staff of our new coaching staff about their making adjustments at halftime, because whatever happened, it was like the light bulb went off, and then all of a sudden, it's a completely different team. I was out hanging out with some friends at a local restaurant, and the game was on, and it was like the first, I was like, oh, man, you know, what in the world? And then, like, the team, I think I sent you a text, guys, about the team didn't even know, an offense didn't show up, and then all of a sudden the second half, it's a completely different ball game.
Well, the offense was one thing, but we couldn't stop them at all at the first half on defense.
Yeah,
they were
cool.
Going up and down the field on us like a knife through butter. We couldn't keep up with their pace. We didn't know what we were doing. It looked bad. It was like the, you know, I was like, it's the return of Scotty Montgomery the way we were playing. Now on offense, actually, we were moving the ball. We just were screwing up. What being consistent, but it was ugly early, and towards the end of the first half, we started to play a little better. We kicked a couple field goals. We got them to punt. Hats off to, by the way, our special teams coach is freaking awesome. For him to get that field goal unit on the field with no timeouts, with what was it, 12 seconds, Bubba, something like that?
Yeah.
For him to be able to get a field goal unit on the field and get that kickoff and make it was a great job by the kicker, the holder, the line, and great job by the special teams coordinator having the guys ready to go. And just hats off. I'm talking about him for a minute before we break down the game, man. Two block punts this year. We've attempted two onside kicks so far this year. We've recovered one of them. We've got on a white field goal or a fast field goal, depending on what you want to call it.
Yeah. And it's a 40-yarder at that.
Yeah, exactly. We've done well in the return game at times.
Yes.
I mean, our special teams coach is doing a hell of a job.
It's night and day. I was going to – you know that special teams is one of my things. It's fundamentals of football, you know, and you look at that, and I know that we don't like Virginia Tech now, but I do like Frank Beamer, and I think the Beamer ball as far as the special teams of that – it kind of reminds me of, like, we've taken a playbook from him when it comes to special teams and
if you make it a priority, a lot of head coaches, everybody practices special teams. But some coaches put a bigger emphasis on it. And if you can do that, it's an advantage, man. You can make plays in special teams, you know, block punts and things like that. I mean, you've suddenly opened up a whole other way to score. And I'm going to tell you guys something. In general, block punts, Bubba, you watch as much college football as I do. Block punts are becoming less and less common in college football.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And that's one of those things over the last few years. Like, even going back to Frank Beamer's time at Virginia Tech, and you saw those numbers kind of decline. And obviously against them, I mean, folks were looking for it, and then they still had a lot of success doing it. But yeah, like you say, I mean, everybody practices and everybody works on it, but then the attention to detail and so forth is put there. It certainly varies, and it's reaping rewards for the Pirates, or the Pirates are reaping rewards, I should say, from the attention that they place on it and the emphasis they place on it right now. But as far as the offense goes, UCF's offense, that is, and with their tempo, it's kind of like, yes, high-tempo offenses are very common in this day and age, but we really hadn't seen them this year. Yeah, you had William and Mary, but we had them behind the chains and controlled that game, so they really weren't able to play with tempo to amount to anything. So with UCF, it was kind of a deal like Navy, where you're seeing something that you couldn't really simulate but so well in practice. So it takes you a couple possessions or a few possessions to get used to it.
And tempo is one thing. You know, the reason – that kind of stuff was kind of invented was to take advantage of – it was really to kind of even the game when you maybe didn't have as much talent. And now you got a team running tempo really fast, and they've actually got probably the most – now, not probably. They're the most talented team in the league. So now you've got a bunch of talent running tempo, and, man, that takes some adjusting on defense. So good point, Bubba. We had to get used to it. The players had to go get coached up at the half on what to look for. And if you Coach Houston's post-game comments said we had to decide what we were going to commit to and to let some things go and kind of concentrate on how we were going to – what we were going to concentrate on. He had some interesting post-game comments. And so we made some changes at halftime on what our emphasis was going to be on defense, and it paid off in the second half. Not to a victory, but to a great performance.
Great performance, and it just makes me feel great. I think when I was talking last night on 94.3 The Game, their no quarter post-game show with you guys, it was really, really great to see where in the past few seasons you couldn't watch the games. I mean, we did watch the games, but not with the same enthusiasm, excitement. That game last night, even though we lost, it was exciting to watch all the way through. Because we're competitive. We're competitive after, in the first season of Mike Houston, we're competitive again. It was more, last night was the first time that I really believe, maybe you could argue the Temple game, that you start to see Pirate football again. And yes, we know about the issues of talent and lack of depth and all that stuff, but the good news is that when you see these young guys, imagine, we were talking again last night about how young this team is, but imagine what this Holt Naylor's, everybody is so critical of him, but the bottom line is he's only a sophomore. Imagine what he's going to be like when he's a senior. A lot of these guys are going to be juniors and seniors, the upperclassmen, with the guys that Mike Houston is recruiting right now. I mean, it's just amazing to watch these guys. They're so young, and it just comes down to lack of depth and, I think, experience on the Pirates right now.
Yeah, and some of the criticism of Holton is justified. There's nothing wrong with criticism. As long as it's constructive criticism, and you're going somewhere with it. And you're not just saying Holton Naylor sucks.
Right.
But
hey, guys, some breaking news. ECU, we are a one-point favorite against USF.
Uh-oh, I don't like that, Dave or Bubba. I want to be an underdog. I don't want to be a favorite. I want to be an underdog. Damn. Ah! Oh, no. All right, guys. Well, here you go. Pirate football team, you've caught some people's attention. You play the UCF Knights like that, that gets some people's attention. Now, suddenly, you're favored against the team.
Do something
about
it.
Last time they came in here, beat us, what was it, 63-33, something like that, in
2016? Yeah. Yeah, they pulled away in the second half, if my memory serves me right, 2 years ago.
All of a sudden, you're the favorite. So, if any of the players that are listening, we're challenging you. Vegas is saying you're supposed to beat this team. Now go do it.
Here's a lock the damn gates, right?
Lock the damn gates, exactly. Go do it. Go beat them. Go beat them. You're the favorites. Go take care of business. Go take care of business. And look, they can call the favorites all they want to. I still think we're the underdog. When you've lost to a team in your place, every time they came in here, when they've beaten your ass every time you played them except one, when the last time they came in here, they dropped 60-some points on you, you ain't a favorite to do nothing. They've beaten BYU. We've beaten Old Dominion. That's our best win. They beat BYU, who's beaten USC and Boise State. So get ready, guys. You got a chance. Vegas thinks you can do it. Go do it. Prove them right.
That is really I love that. It's the half. It's the pregame speech way, way early, right, Bubba? I love the passion. I'll tell you one thing that I love now is Kyle is a perfect example of someone who has a passion, and the passion was the last few seasons we were so angry, and now it's great to see the passion of we know we can win now, and let's do something about it. That's great to see the shift, Kyle.
I'm fired up, man. I want to go play that game today. I wish we could play it today.
Yeah, that reminded me a little bit. I remember when Coach Holtz, Lou Holtz, that is, and would have his pep talks on Thursday night and Friday nights on ESPN.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't talk like this when I was doing it.
I mean, well, guys,
I had that game circled. I've had it circled for weeks, guys, and I'm ready.
Yeah, if somehow you can. I know we were talking about this before the show. We do like a pregame. We do our like pregame getting ready for the show, and we were talking. And I really feel like that with if you somehow you can win this. So you got to win this. And by the way, let me say you send a challenge out to players. Let's send a challenge out to our fans. Come on, get your butt there. It's homecoming. We're going to have a decent crowd to begin with. But we need to have a really. And I said this for my radio show for tomorrow, for Monday on the local station, that we need Pirate fans out there. We have the nickname Rowdy Dowdy. We can't use that again until we get the fans there. Let's get the fans there. We'll be the 12th man, and we're going to be so loud that, you know, maybe there'll be delay of game penalties. There's frustration.
Homecoming, man. It's homecoming.
And actually, guys, I just saw another tweet about that. Spread, we had actually opened as a 1-point dog, and it's moved that quickly from a 1-point dog to a 1-point favorite.
You see that, guys? Vegas thinks you're going to lose. We were 1-point underdogs, but the public, the general public, the bettors, if you will, they got confidence in you. 1-point favorite. But you got to now Vegas says this is a dog. They think
they got
their lose, those sons of bitches. So
and
you
how about Vegas giving us a 34 point? How about the spread there last week? So they didn't know what they were talking about. So we can win this game for sure this week.
Yeah.
I told you guys it was not going to be a 34 point. I didn't think we were going to win it, but I knew it was not going to be that much of a blowout. Now, the first half was
in the first half, it looked like it was going to be a 34 point rout, if not then some. But the second half, we showed what we can do. And if we play like.
Hey, I'm thrilled that I was wrong.
Yeah. If we play like we did in the second half against UCF, against South Florida, we will win. If we play that for four quarters, next Saturday in Greenville, we will win.
Right. There's bright. You should see bright spots. That's a good point, Kyle. You see bright spots, and where there's times that you know glimmers of hope where you see. Like the offense or defense are making big plays, but if they can put all four quarters, it sounds like a cliche, but it's true. If we can put all four quarters and have the best game of the season as far as being played this Saturday, oh my gosh. And then you have Cincinnati, you have two home games back to back. This is a critical piece of our season. These next two games at home, we've got to win the homestand.
Yeah. And I'd love to know the last time outside of Connecticut, we were favored in a conference game at home. Maybe against UCF in 2016. Scotty,
what about that
Tulane
game 2 years ago?
I don't think we were.
It was cold as all get out.
I think they were a slight favorite.
Okay.
But I think maybe UCF in 2016, Scotty's first year, UCF was – that was about the point where Scott Frost started to turn it around.
Yeah.
And they ended up going 6-6. But I think we were a favorite in that game.
I honestly do not recall because I know we were coming off the lopsided loss up at Virginia Tech. And
yeah,
I think you may be right there.
This is rare air. I mean, 1-point favorite against South Florida. I really do believe if it weren't for that performance last night, we would be underdogs. I had this game at South Florida by four. It's what my predicted spread was, not what I think is going to happen. So 1-point favorite, and I don't know. I mean, that guys got the pressure on now. Instead of being the hunters, suddenly we're the hunted. But we got to act like we're still the hunters.
Right.
And,
on the shoulder.
I mean, it's basically a pick'em anyway, is what it is.
Right.
And
it's an even game, right?
What we need to do is come out. Now, one thing we do need to do is come out and play with confidence. That we desperately need to do. And after that performance last night, hopefully we will. And I'm fired up, guys. I'm ready for next Saturday. I've seen some weather forecasts call for rain. I hope not. I hope we have beautiful weather because it'd be nice to break 40,000. I think we have a legit shot if we get good weather of breaking 40,000 for this.
I think we're – Bubba, you remember we were talking about DeJohn Gilbert. I think the Bing's homecoming and all that, I think we'll have a shot at 40 just for that. So if there's any way that we can get some more folks to show up. You know, when you have the right coach, when you see to me what it comes down to is the evidence, the product that we're putting on the field now, as far as the game plan, as far as the guys being in position, you look at the defense, look at them in the second half. My defense, way better in the second half. So you look at that, and that's more reason for people to go to 1-800, call 1-800-DIAL-ECU or ecupirates.com.
Yeah, exactly. Go buy tickets and come on out and support the Pirates, man. This is going to be a big-time environment, big-time game. Now, don't stay home because of this, but it's going to be on ESPNU, Saturday afternoon game on ESPNU.
And how about the fact that we have a 3:45 game? I mean, that's to me, we could talk that now, but to me, my favorite games are that 3:30 window, so it's virtually that.
Those are actually my least favorite. I'll tell you
really?
Why. Yeah, I'll tell you why. I like watching other games. So when you have a 3:30 kickoff, you miss the early games and you miss some of the late games. So you can't stay home and watch the 12 o'clock games, not much of them anyway. If you're going to tailgate, you're going to miss all the 12 o'clock games. So you miss your early games. And then time the game's over, the 7 o'clock games are, you know, time you get back home, 7 o'clock games are already going on. Well, the game still may be going on. So my point is you're going to miss the early games, you're going to miss the late games.
Well,
but
the most important game
really
is the Pirate game.
They can play it at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'd be there. I'm ready for this one.
Yeah, well, for me personally, I'm not a morning person at all, and the night games are great as far as the atmosphere. I love the atmosphere of it, but to me, when you have a 3:30 game, you get home early, or you can go out to eat like with you guys, and then you can get home at a decent hour versus the night games, you know, you get home at 1 or 2, and then poor Bubba. When do y'all get home, about 3 o'clock in the morning, Bubba, for those night games?
No, normally if it's a night game, we'll spend the night with someone. I mean, we've certainly done it before, but yeah.
That's true.
If it's a 7:30, 8 o'clock kickoff, yeah, we'll typically stay with some friends. But
speaking of game times, I just want to say this real quick too. I thought about yesterday. How about the fact that in the Montgomery area, how many noon games do we see because we were so bad? So for me personally, I'm glad to see night games. I'm glad to see the 3:30 window. It's way better than I understand. Sometimes they have to fit the games in and all that. It still comes down to television, but it's nice to know that we're not like noon every single week. It seemed like that, especially in 2018.
Yeah, no, we had a lot of noon kickoffs, and we've had a lot of night games here recently. Going back to last year, actually, Bubba, you and I talked about this. We were trying to remember when the last time we played a day game in Dowdy-Ficklin. All the games have been night games this year, and then the last few home games last year seemed to be night games.
The last time we played a day game was the first week of November last year against Memphis.
Okay.
That was a noon kickoff on that day against Memphis, and it was actually a fairly competitive ball game. I think we ended up losing, what, like 56-40 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm glad to have a day game. I would have preferred, you know, and most Pirate fans disagree with this, I would prefer it to be a 12 o'clock kick. But I'll take 3:45, and like I said, I really don't give a damn if it's a 1 a.m. kick. I'm fired up for this one. But, guys, last night, a big performance by C.J. Johnson. C.J., true freshman, doesn't look like a true freshman. He's built like a guy who's been here a couple years. He's shown flash just last night. He really put it together. And Bubba, did you notice how we were using him over the middle more, kind of the way we used to use Dwayne Harris, Justin Hardy, et cetera?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something I know we had discussed, and it was nice to see us do that. He was making some tremendous catches. He had the catch on the outside where he laid out and made the one-hand, left-handed catch. Just awesome early in the ball game. And then, like you said, those crossing routes, the 10, 12, 15-yard square ends or dig routes, and not bad coverage, but he's very good at making plays on the football and catching the ball in traffic. So I'm very excited about his future. Over the last two games, he's had 16 catches for over 200 yards.
Yeah. And
how physical he is running the football after the catch. That's something else.
And also the fact that, you know, Trim McGee said last night on the No Quarter postgame show that there's been this season 8 true freshmen played for the Pirates this year. So I haven't had a chance to check that, but if that's true, I know it's been a lot. Then again, that says a lot about the recruiting class that I think initially was Montgomery, and then great job on Mike Houston and staff to keep the class pretty much intact. And then these guys are getting playing time because of their abilities. Jaquan McMillan, I mean, just to see him, happy to see, you know, the DBs that are doing well, and yeah. It'll be good to see what I'm happy to see, not to fast forward my life 3 or 4 years. I'm just curious to see how this team goes from now, these freshmen, redshirt freshmen, sophomores, so again, 2-3 years down the road, with the coaching staff, with them actually getting the player development has been something that's been missing the last few years. So that's what, for me, is that it's great that you can recruit them, but what do you do when you get them?
Well, our best wide receiver is a true freshman. I think that says a lot about, and I'm not saying anything bad about any of the other players on the team, but when our best wide receiver is a true freshman, I think it says a lot about some of the misses in recruiting recent years and maybe lack of development of guys that are here. Thankfully, a guy like Tyler Schneed came in as a walk-on, you know, very undersized kid, but a hell of a football player. And, is he a sophomore guy or a freshman?
No, he's a true freshman. Yeah, he's from the western part of the state in East Rutherford High School, and he's a guy that this staff
has been
on. This staff had been on him at JMU, but yes, he did. He was a guy that we were extremely high on coming in, and that Coach Houston stated back in the spring that he fully expected him to be able to contribute as a true freshman, and he's certainly done just that. And I like how hard he runs, and it was such a tremendous relief when he came back in the game last night, because I was afraid he might be out.
Yeah, me too. And I was glad to see him back in there on that last scoring drive. And we got some other talent behind him. Christian is a good back, but he's got to learn to hold on to the ball. And then Tay Williams, he's shown flashes. But I think Mooney is probably the best of the three. And it'd be interesting to see if Penix comes back anytime soon. They're going to have a decision to make. I think if he were able to come back this week, I think they'd go in and play him. I think if it gets to be after the Cincinnati game, you think we probably redshirt him, Bubba, Dave?
I would think so, because you look at it, we got five games left. He's played in two, so that means he can play in two more and still redshirt. So if it gets down to that point, hopefully, obviously I want the kid to be healthy as soon as he can be. But if it gets to that point, that would be awesome to be able to have him for UConn and Tulsa and know that you're going to have him in 2020.
Yeah,
I think that's the right thing to do. I think it's the right thing to do because we talked about this before with the particular injury that comes to mind. I mean, that's with that, we don't know the condition of it, how bad it is. It's smart not to rush the kid. And then when you have the talent that we do, Penix is awesome. And like you said, Bob, if we can have him another year, but it's one thing if you are very limited in what you have. But when you have a good stable of backs in the running back room, then you're good.
Yeah, but if he's eligible to go this week, I say play him, because we're sitting here with a legit chance. If we can win this week, we have a legit chance to try to get 6 wins and maybe a bowl game. So if you get him back this week, play him. If it gets to be after, say, that Cincinnati game, then, yeah, don't play him any more than 2 games and redshirt him.
Yeah, that would be awesome if we could. And if we can't, we can. I mean, if we have to have him more because we're fighting for, like you said, Kyle, the game for a bowl game, then certainly we'll do what we have to do. But the great thing about this staff is they're not going to hurt a player, bring him back too soon to end his career, or to have like a basically you come back too soon and then you have like a season injury, ending injury that would hurt us as far as depth. So it's good to know that we have a chance for him to come back, and it's probably going to be, I think it's going to be sometime in November, the way that I hope he comes back on Saturday, but I would say it's probably going to be more like the Cincinnati or SMU game.
Yeah, we'll see. Time will tell. But, it's good to see Mooney performing like he is and, stepping up in some of these other backs. And just who else took a set out to you, Bubba, last night besides
another point I wanted to make while we're on the running game. This is something we talked about on 94.3 The Game and the No Quarter postgame show last night, and that's how I said that I had gone back and watched a lot of the Temple game, and you really saw some flashes of what could be if we started executing with more consistency. And you saw some of that last night. Obviously, it's not where it needs to be, but running, when was the last time we ran for 170 yards against the caliber of someone like UCF? And it was hands down our best performance offensively. And that being said, obviously, plenty of room for improvement. But one of the things that I really thought stood out and that was awesome to see is with the offensive line, how they're celebrating with the running backs. And then I think it was Deontay Smith. I may be wrong. It may have been someone else. But they were blocking a guy through the whistle and 6-7 yards down the field, just driving the guy. And the UCF guy was so ticked off and just trying to get off the block that he reached over that lineman and was trying to grab the back of his jersey and sling him off. And just we're playing with the nastiness on the offensive line within the rules, but a nastiness and an attitude that has been missing for a long time.
Yeah, and Deontay got hurt there in the fourth quarter. So hopefully he'll be ready to go against South Florida. We had a couple guys get banged up on the O-line, and we need those guys this week desperately because we need to win this football game.
No doubt about it. I mean, you're talking about Kyle. I think we were talking about this on Friday, but it's days running together. It's been a busy week. But it looks like right now when you look at the games coming up, and I told you guys this last night when we were waiting to go on the post-game show, that I'm excited to see how these next five games play out because it shows me that another thing, Kyle, we were talking about is the fact, look how this first season of Mike Houston is like he's building a team. You hear about how he's changing the culture. But if you look at it, you can already see those strides. And when you look at the next five games is you always hear it's not how you start, it's how you finish. Well, how about if we have a strong finish to the season, 2020 with season tickets, it just everything will it'll be a nice shot in the arm.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, yeah, you have 5 games left, you hope you can win. My goal is to win 3 out of the last 5. And get to 6-6. That's what I want. If we could do better than that, that'd be fantastic. And if we come up short, as long as we show progress, whatever. But hopefully, you really look at things and you think you have a realistic shot to win this weekend. Cincinnati, SMU are going to be very tough games. And then you close it out with 2 that you think you have a realistic shot at, with Connecticut and Tulsa. And so we'll see what happens. First up, though, is the Bulls. And, they struggled yesterday against Navy big time, only put up 3 points. But, you know, they beat BYU the week before, and BYU, now granted Boise State was without their starting quarterback, but BYU beat Boise State last night. And the week, you know, just last week, South Florida beat BYU. So it's not going to be easy. But no, I'm fired up, man. You can't help but be fired up to see how those guys played in the second half. And how about Bubba, Dave? We talked about this off the air. Our special teams.
Oh, yeah.
Or did we talk about that on the air?
No, it was off the air. It was our pregame. Okay. Our pregame meal. We haven't talked about that yet.
Yeah, Roy Tesh, what a remarkable job. Obviously, blocked the punt for a touchdown. Warren Saba up there at Old Dominion, and what was a 3-point win. And then last night, that momentum shift that took place early in the second half. And I think it was Leroy Henley that got it last night. But remarkable play, nearly went for a touchdown once again. Jake Verity, 3-for-3 on field goals, including a 40-yarder there with the clock winding down in the first half. You had a nice punt return by Tyler Snead, had a 16-yard punt return that looked like it might even go for more.
Yeah, that was that's one of the elements that's been missing for me under Montgomery was the special teams was – No, I mean, you were talking about this, too, before the podcast, Cal, about the very fact that they end up – every coach practices special teams, but it's the coaches that put the emphasis. It's, to me, an important fundamental of the game. And a lot of coaches just kind of like, you guys go over there and you kickers, you just go over there.
Guys, and I actually did think we talked about this earlier. I think this was part of the podcast. I think we're chewing our food twice, but that's okay.
I think, yeah.
That's okay. That's all right. We're double getting that point across, guys.
Showing the love to Coach Roy Tesh.
We love you, Roy Tesh. We love you. Don't go anywhere, my friend. Stay right here with Coach Houston.
Yeah.
There are a lot of loyal guys, and that's why we're – another reason why you're seeing success. These guys know that they're buying in because they're hungry. They've lost. These seniors – imagine if these seniors could go out with just going to a bowl game, you know? How cool would that be to see for these guys?
And even if we don't get to a bowl, to get to that 6-6 point, if we can somehow do it. And no, you didn't have a losing season. You guys have gone out winners. You put 6 wins up. It ain't your fault that we're in the situation we're in with the two FCS opponents. You know, we didn't, you know, so we'll see how things play out, but... Hey, Bob,
That's the other thing. Very quickly, it's a shame that it didn't have to be that way, having two FCS opponents, and that we're not playing someone, be it UMass or whomever, that we could have taken care of business against. Where if we got to 6-6, we would definitely be going to a bowl.
Yeah, Bob, I wanted to ask you. I know we talked about this off there, but one thing that I noticed last night, and the commentators also mentioned. Is at times Holton's got a habit of going backwards and running outside rather than stepping up into the pocket. And you mentioned you had that problem too playing quarterback. Talk about that.
Yeah, that's what the offensive line, I mean, it just depends on the protection. But and they're taught to build a pocket and not get beat to the inside. And that's something that Eric Graham talked about on 94.3's post-game show last night, no quarter post-game. So definitely go back and give that a listen. Some good stuff from Eric and T-Cop, but essentially, if they're forming that pocket, so it's basically kind of a circle, and instead of escaping left or right, and you just have to step up and take a step up, slide your feet toward the line of scrimmage and keep your eyes down the field, and that's much easier said than done, and takes a lot of practice to remain calm in the eye of the storm, so to speak, and that's something you'll hear coaches say, but I know last night at least one of those sacks is when Holton tried to escape rather than step up because there was definitely a pocket there.
Do you think one thing I've noticed about him holding the ball so damn long, do you think, you know, in high school and all, he got so used to pulling it down and running it when he didn't see something right away, and now he's being coached not to do that so much and that he hasn't figured out yet? Basically, Holton physically is a heck of a talent. Do you think that because of in high school using his running ability so much that he's being coached now, make your reads, don't pull it down and run it unless you need to if it's not a design run. Do you think that's why it's taking him longer to go through his progressions because he wasn't coached to do that more earlier in his career?
Obviously, I don't know the coaching he got. I know Nate Connor's done a solid job there at D.H. Conley, so I don't want to really speak specifically about that. I definitely think maybe the style of play and something that could have something to do with it.
Yeah, but when you're in high school, man, you could be.
But
you're such a talent. I mean, it's
right.
Not like he was coached poorly. You go make a play, son.
Right. Yeah.
He's a man among boys. He was a man among boys in high school, and when he comes to college, I mean, we were talking about UCF last night. You know, I mean, it's a big difference between Conley and Rose and East Carolina and UCF.
But as far as that goes, so what I wanted to say is, as far as Holton and pulling it down and running and so forth, that's something. The point that Kyle makes is certainly valid, just in general terms. And then also, when you're not used to having a ton of protection, just trying to have that mental clock, but at the same time, when do I take off? And you're not used to having that full 3.5 to 4 seconds and having to get it out faster. And like last year, he spent so much time on the run, so that's something that certainly plays a role as well.
Yeah, and it almost seems like sometimes he's more comfortable when he is able to throw it on the run.
The commentators made that remark last night. I don't remember whether it was the play-by-play guy or the color analyst, but he was talking about Ehlers throwing it well on the run.
Yeah, because he had to do it so much.
And
that goes back to high school when he was doing that, just running around back there making plays for being such a great athlete. And sometimes I think, and I agree, I wonder if he's being almost overcoached a little bit, meaning sometimes you just need to let him take advantage of it. Say, all right, if 1-2, if it ain't there, if you don't see it, count to three, hold 1-2-3. If it ain't there, pull it down.
But I think one thing, though, Bubba, that comes to mind for me is I don't want it to be where it's the offense is one-dimensional, where it's going to be Holton running. Every time we have a running play, it's Holton, you know. That's one thing
that
I worry about.
I'm not talking about a running play with Holton, Bubba, or Dave. I'm talking about instead of telling Holton to go through all your reads and progressions, maybe at this point you'd be more successful telling him, you know, look for your primary, look for your hot route. If it ain't there, pull it down. I mean, Bubba, do you disagree with that? Maybe you do.
Sorry, I had to step away for a moment, but
okay.
Well, just depends on the situation. I mean, you want to be pretty consistent in what you're coaching your quarterback to do and so forth. So
it's, your dog's coaching him up right now.
Yeah, our neighbor's dog is certainly coaching Riley up right now.
Yeah, guys, we reached out to Terry Gallagher, and he's not going to be able to make it for this show, but certainly hopefully he'll have Bunk on. Maybe we can plan to have him on next week, but certainly love Terry Gallagher. He listens, a big fan of our podcast and a great friend we've made over the last year. So, Bunk, I know you're listening to us there in South Georgia, and looking forward to have him in the southeastern part of North Carolina in the next year or so.
Yeah, Terry. Terry's big time in us today. You know, he's doing a radio show now for high school football, live every Friday night, and I think with some live streaming too. So he doesn't have time for the little old Sports Objective podcast anymore. He's big time down there in South Georgia.
With his laptop and everything.
Media star. I mean, so he doesn't have time for us. But no, he'll be back with us soon. Maybe we'll have him on next week for homecoming weekend to hopefully talk about a huge win for the Pirates.
Oh man, that's going to be great. That's going to be great if we can do it. You have to play the games for sure, but definitely it's nice to know that we have a legitimate shot, right?
Yeah, I mean, you feel like you do. Vegas feels like we do, and guys, we just need to find a way to win this game. I think this is the biggest game in Greenville, maybe since 2014. Certainly since 20. I would say Dave, Bubba, since Cincinnati 2015, playing for a bowl game.
Oh, yeah. There's no question. And, in fact, you could argue that this is the way I look at it now. Pretty much the rest of the way, it's almost like playoffs. I mean, not that we're not going to be playing if we don't, you know, anymore after if we lose to that. But you have to have that mentality, the USF game, that that's basically like a bowl game or, you know, playoff kind of game to keep you alive, so to speak, in the hunt. And then from there, you never know if we have a, so this huge win against USF, what kind of confidence it would give you for the rest of the month of for the month of November. And you even have a luxury of having another bye week, which I think that's a good thing in November to have a bye week, which we can as a coach, I don't like bye weeks, but at the same time, there might be some kids that are hurt. And if you could have them healthy, some banged up guys that you could have healthy, and then you have two potentially winnable games of Tulsa and you have Connecticut and Tulsa back to back. I think that would be, that's a nice little fit for us too. The scheduling gods were kind to us in that regard.
Yeah. I mean, we got through, you know, South Florida first, but speaking of Tulsa, UConn, et cetera, guys, yesterday in the American, there was some other interesting scores. You had Memphis just obliterating Tulane, man. They were pissed off. Memphis got beat by Temple the week before, and you had Tulane coming in. Tulane's been playing good football. Didn't see that coming at all. Memphis dominated Tulane. Memphis beat Tulane worse than UCF beat us yesterday. Who saw that coming? I mean, the Tigers back on the winning ways and showing that they may be the team to beat in the West. Did you watch any of that one, Bubba?
I got to see a little bit of it. One of the things, and like you, I certainly did not see a 30-point loss for Tulane coming. Didn't surprise me that Memphis won, even though I'd actually picked Tulane. But Tulane threw three picks in that game. McMillan, the quarterback, he's had a solid year, but he had those three costly picks yesterday that really hurt the Green Wave's cause. So it'll be interesting to see how they respond. And then another game that surprised me, not so much that SMU won, but the way SMU dominated Temple, putting up something like 650 yards of offense. Shane Bouchelle, I think he was the Walter Camp Offensive Player of the Week, threw for 457 yards and six touchdowns.
Yeah, and I think if you look, guys, Bubba, if you look at Temple's schedule, they hadn't played anybody with much of a passing game. So if you really, now that you look at that in hindsight, it maybe isn't as surprising because they haven't played anybody that can sling the ball all over the field. So
that's something I thought about last night as well. I thought, like you, well, looking down their schedule, they really hadn't faced a great passing team.
No. So nice win for Temple, nice win for Memphis. Houston is, you know, they made the weird decision after getting off to a 1-3 start to redshirt their starting quarterback and one of the best players in America, and
De'Aaron King,
and then their backup got hurt. And guess what? Now you're starting a true freshman, coach's son,
Logan Holgerson.
Yep. And plus, he has a ton. There's a ton of other injuries. There's a ton of injuries on Houston football team, and they were lucky. They were damn lucky to beat UConn yesterday up in Connecticut. I venture to say, had that Houston team came to Greenville yesterday and played like they did, and we played like we did last night, we would have beat Houston by two touchdowns. They were lucky to beat Connecticut yesterday. I watched a lot of that game. It looked like two bad football teams playing.
Yeah, 24-17, I believe, was that final. And I looked at the numbers a bit, and UConn had, I think, more than 430 yards of offense, and Houston just had a little over 300.
Yeah, it's just simply turnovers and UConn not knowing how to win. So the Cougs go up to Connecticut and get the W and a poorly played ball game. And I will say this, UConn they got a pretty good running back, but
yeah, Kevin Mensa.
Yeah. Anything else in the American of note from yesterday? Navy, obviously Navy.
We mentioned that earlier since we're playing USF next week, and we talked about how Navy handled the Bulls 35-3, and they really didn't even play particularly well, especially in the second half of that game. Just kind of had it on cruise control, and USF still gave up more than like 425, 30 yards or something on the ground to Navy. And then have we touched on Cincinnati and Tulsa?
We have not. Yeah, that was a low-scoring game. Tulsa bounced back after their – well, I say they bounced back. They still lost. Tulsa had a good performance in a loss to SMU, then got destroyed by Navy, then had a good defensive performance against Cincy, but Cincy won by – was it 24-14, Bubba?
I believe it was 24-13. It was 17-13, and then Cincinnati got a score there fairly late to salt the game away. Yeah.
Yeah, so Cincinnati took care of business. And Boise State losing last night to BYU is of relevance because that pretty much, you know, unless App State beats South Carolina, that pretty much is going to guarantee the American is going to end up with the Group of Six spot again in the New Year's Six Bowl. Or the Group of Five spot again in the New Year's Six Bowl. It'll be Cincinnati, UCF, Memphis, or SMU. So that's good for the conference that Boise lost. App can get into the discussion if they beat South Carolina. But unless that happens, you know, and it's getting to the point, guys, when the Americans get in that spot almost every year, and I believe all but one year, I believe since the new format, Boise got it one time. Every other year it's been an American Conference team, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, as far as that goes, I certainly remember.
It was Houston in 14.
Houston taking down 14, Florida State.
Boise in 15. Then in 16 is the one I'm scratching my head on, but 17 and 18 it was UCF.
Yeah.
So trying to remember who got it in 16. Having trouble with that. But anyway, the point is when the American is getting that spot almost every year and we're getting good TV coverage, we're getting good ratings, three teams in the top 25, I mean, I don't know what else you have to do to show that we're on even keel with the Power Five conferences, as they like to call themselves. There is certainly more in common with the American and the Pac-12 and the ACC than there is with the American and the MAC and Sun Belt. I mean, I'm sorry, but anybody who can't see that is just ignorant.
While we're on App State and some teams of regional interest before we discuss some of the more national results, so App State playing their first game as a ranked team this year, 24th in both the coaches and AP polls, and they had ULM, a team that, and they were 2-0 on the west side of the Sun Belt. They came to Boone yesterday, and App State won that game 52-7. And one of the biggest things that surprised me, besides just the margin of that victory, is the App State defense. They're known for defense, but this year they've had their struggles at times under their new defensive staff, Ted Roof and company. But in the last 2 weeks against Lafayette, and then also ULM, they've allowed just 7 points each of those games, and those are teams. Remember, ULM and put up 44 against Florida State.
Yeah, I don't know if that's that impressive anymore, but they still did it.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, in Florida State, that's what kind of a good segue there. Florida State was in Winston-Salem last night and lost, 22-20 to Wake Forest.
Yeah,
so the Demon Deacons were able to bounce back after losing that 62-59 affair to Louisville a week ago.
Yeah, North Carolina, Virginia Tech, six overtimes. Virginia Tech wins at 42-40 in six overtimes. Guys, it's going to come down to over there in that Atlantic Division. It's gonna come down to the Hokies and the Cavaliers Thanksgiving weekend.
Atlanta, yeah, or Coastal.
Yeah, well, I'm no Trent, but Coastal, Coastal rather. Now Pitt may still have something to say about it. So don't want to disrespect Pitt. They're certainly going to have some say in who's going to win the Coastal, but it could very well come down to the Cavs and the Hokies.
Yeah, what a bounce back win it was for Virginia. Duke has been pretty solid this year, and then UVA bounces back after losing down at Miami last week, and just destroys Duke at home yesterday. So the Cavs are now 3-1, and remember, we talked about Pitt being in the running on that side of the ACC.
and Pitt had lost to UVA in the season opener. So,
yeah. And they took care of business against Syracuse. And by the way, I want to comment on this, Dave. Virginia blowing out Duke, and you know, UVA losing to Miami the week before. I don't know what the hell's wrong with Miami. They play up to the level of their competition every week. Georgia Tech's a bad football team, and was shocked to see Georgia Tech win that game yesterday. And something I want to comment on about that game, and I'm seeing it less and less in college football, measuring. Guys, you know, pulling out the chains and measuring football has become a thing of the past for first down. The referees either eyeball it or they go to replay. Well, yesterday they gave Miami a first down in overtime. Georgia Tech challenged it. They reviewed it, moved the ball back, and Miami was still given the first down. Georgia Tech insisted they measure. Guess what? They didn't get the first down. Ball game was over. Georgia Tech won in overtime.
Wow. That's a great point, Kyle. That's something that you and I have talked about multiple times off the air, and that's something that's been a pet peeve of mine. And just, I don't know if it has to do with the pace of play or what, but it just, it's ridiculous how when it's relatively close, I can't believe that you haven't heard coaches complain more about it. And maybe they have, and I just hadn't heard it.
Yeah, and it came into play twice yesterday. Bubba, you were kind of falling asleep last night at the end of the Boise State BYU game. We were on the phone, but they had to measure in that game late, and it looked like Boise had stopped the BYU, but BYU had picked up the first down when they measured. And like I said, had Georgia Tech not insisted that they measure, Miami would have picked up the first down, and that ball game would have continued. Instead, ball game was over.
One question I had for you guys is that Kyle and I talked about this, Bubba, a few days ago, and I know y'all have talked about it as well. I wanted to be one of the first, as far as our media is concerned. You guys have done like really good research on it, and I want to pitch this out to you guys about with the idea if the Pirates can go 6-6. I know it's premature, but it's good to look at since we're competitive now and we actually have a chance. It's not a pipe dream to go to the postseason in a bowl game. I know, Kyle, we were talking about the fact, and you told me that you and Bubba had, about the fact that there's teams in the ACC, SEC, for example, that they won't have enough teams to qualify. So if there's a way that we can go 6-6, there's a good chance that if we can at least go 6-6, we have a good shot to get to a bowl game. And you know, you said you started to name some teams in
the
SEC.
Well, the situation we're in is, you know, if we were 6-6, generally we would be in a bowl. Because of our conference ties and because of other conferences not qualifying. But what we need to have happen if we get to six is we need there not to be enough 6-6 teams with five FBS wins. So then what happens is you deck stuff as any 6-6 team, even if you get two FBS wins. Then after that, they go to 5-7. And that's only happened one time in recent history. But I think there's a possibility this year, because you're going to have some teams in the SEC that normally go to bowls that are going to be probably going to be bowl eligible. And you got some suspensions. I believe Missouri is on a postseason ban. I believe Ole Miss is still on a postseason ban. Arkansas is not going to go to a bowl. Vandy's not going to go to a bowl. Tennessee's not going to go to a bowl. And the SEC has like 11 or 12 bowl tie-ins for 14 teams. So you're going to have a lot of open spots in the SEC. You know, yeah, I have to look at some other conferences.
Yeah, that's something I was – the MAC, how many bowl tie-ins does the MAC have? Because I was looking at the MAC standings, and I noticed that there's quite a few MAC teams that already have three or four losses. So, I mean, don't be surprised if they may not be able to fill all theirs.
So what we need to do, we need to have – if we can really – I don't know how many other teams are maybe in a situation where they'll be 6-6 with two FCS wins. We may be the only one. So if there's one team, if we fall one team short of having enough 6-6 teams, then we would be next up. So I'm sure they're going to put in for a waiver anyway to make us eligible, meaning at 6-6 we would be eligible as anyone else. But I'm sure that waiver will get denied. So we got to get there first, guys. First things first, South Florida. But if we are 6-6, We may have a chance to sneak in to a bowl. We'll just have to wait and see. And I'll really get more into counting up bowl eligible teams and versus bowl spots. You know, if we're sitting there with four or five wins in November and with a couple games to go, and right now it's a little premature, but it is something to look at and keep your eye on, and we'll see how it plays out late in the year.
No question about it. Did you see where Harbaugh was questioned on going for a 58-yard field goal yesterday? He's one of my favorite coaches, but I wanted to get you guys, what were your thoughts about that?
I didn't see that. 58-yard field goal is a ridiculously long field goal. I don't know how good their kicker is, but if his kicker's kicking 60-yard field goals in practice and he had the wind at his back, then so be it. Bubba, yes. You wanted to say something a minute ago.
Yeah, I did. As far as your question, Dave, I wasn't aware of that. I mean, I followed that game some, but I was not aware of that. I definitely don't know enough as far as score time and win. I mean, all the variables that you would consider to really have an opinion on that. But what I was going to say while we were talking about the MAC a little bit as far as the bowl tie-ins, how about the MAC? I was looking just like everybody thought. You got Ball State, Central Michigan, and Kent State right there at the top of the standings.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, isn't that what everybody thought? Yeah. No, that's MAC's a little odd this year. It's who the hell would have thought those three would be
Ball State beating Toledo 52-14, and then Central Michigan. What a job that Jim McElwain's doing there. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see. What if they may very well win the MAC in his first season after going 1-11 or something.
Yeah, what I'm interested in seeing if Mike Bobo is fired at Colorado State. I bet you they may
bring him back.
Yeah, yeah, he did a great job at Colorado State when he was there.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting to see.
Another game out there in the Midwest. How about everybody was talking about that matchup next week, Wisconsin going to the Horseshoe with that defense against high-flying Ohio State, and the Badgers didn't take care of business against the Fighting Illini.
Yeah, shocking. Illinois.
That was really – I failed to mention that. That was one of the games I was going to mention to me that nobody saw that coming, maybe a few Illinois fans. And our late, great teammate, Dave Shepard, he actually went to Champaign. He went to there to Illinois. And Lovie Smith, the first time that he gets a win there, I guess, I mean, that was unbelievable with considering how great Wisconsin is. And that's what I was talking about with you guys. I think Cincinnati's a very good football team. I'm not taking them lightly, but that's why the USF game is important. If somehow you can get a big win, a Cincinnati team that comes in, you never know what's going to happen. You have to play the games, and that's case in point there, the Wisconsin-Illinois game. Lovie Smith is, I don't know if the term hot seat, but there's a lot of unhappy fans in Champaign.
Well, he should have been on the hot seat if he wasn't, because he's been terrible there up to this point. So, great win on Wisconsin. Great win over Wisconsin by the Fighting Illini. Huge win. I mean, God almighty, biggest upset this year in college football.
Congratulations to Grady.
Grady, yes. He's got that beard.
I figured I'd let you do your Grady impersonation.
He looks like Grady from San Francisco. He's like, Fred, did you see our big win over the Wisconsin Badgers?
I want my daddy's records.
Well, that wasn't Grady. That was,
I know it's Bubba, but still, Bubba, I know. Just,
I want records. But no, huge win by the Illini over Wisconsin. No, nobody saw that coming. Biggest upset of the year in college football, and you know, now they got to play Purdue next weekend. It'll be interesting to see what happens if they get back refocused, or if the Boilermakers will get the W. Another weird, just a couple more games to mention that I just found weird. Vanderbilt got their asses kicked by UNLV last week, and then followed up with a win over Missouri.
Yeah.
Did you Missouri see the coach? Is playing pretty good football. So that's very strange. And a game that I kind of enjoyed watching yesterday, I flip around if there's not a game on that I'm really interested in and on my phone. And I saw that Coastal and Georgia Southern were in overtime in the pouring rain down in Statesboro, Georgia. So I put it on that on my phone and watched them play a triple overtime game against each other, Georgia Southern and Coastal. And there was a penalty in that game. Congratulations to Georgia Southern, by the way, getting the win in triple overtime. But there was a penalty in that game in between the third and first fourth quarter, guys. I don't know if you saw it. Utterly ridiculous. Coastal and Georgia Southern were both kind of doing pump up on the sideline. It was either before overtime or before the fourth quarter. And they were pumping, doing the you know, on the sideline in a huddle, each team were kind of trying to pump each other up. It was a tie ball game. And in between the quarters. And they kind of got into a dance off. Basically, doing it, and then Coastal started doing it. And they were both one group was trying to be louder than the other group, dancing around, you know, getting fired up. And the damn Sun Belt referee threw a penalty, penalized every player on the team for unsportsmanlike conduct on both teams. And here's the problem with it. There was a couple of players that already had personal fouls, but guess what that means? They got ejected from the game. Because if you get two personal fouls, you're ejected.
Right.
And those were considered personal fouls. Utterly ridiculous. They were doing nothing wrong. I mean, how stupid of a bunch of officials. If they were scared something was going to get out of hand, okay. But, guys, come on, man. I mean, it's use some common sense, particularly when it means players are going to get ejected. And, you know, I don't know if it made a difference in the outcome of the game, but I thought it was utterly ridiculous. Just
well,
to
that's
be honest.
One of the reasons.
Go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to say one quick thing. Obviously, I don't like cheap shots and the personal fouls, and there's times for that. But when you say common sense, there's no question about it with that kind of – that's the only bad thing when you – for example, they need to take a look at that whenever there's two personal fouls and a guy gets ejected. They need to look at that because that's a perfect example of, yes, you're trying to police the game where guys – you don't want guys getting hurt and you don't want guys doing cheap shots and – playing dirty.
Yeah,
there's one thing playing the game
around
dirty.
The sideline in a group is not a cheap shot. I mean, it's ridiculous.
No.
Yeah,
I'll
share the. I'm going to share the link. I'll go share it. If you're listening now, go to the Sports Objective Facebook page. You'll be able to find the link. I'm about to share it, and it's utterly ridiculous that this happened.
All right, guys. Do you have anything before we wrap things up?
A couple things, and while we're on the topic of some crazy happenings, and this is something I'm sure most folks saw it on the highlights, but prior to the Oklahoma-West Virginia game, the Sooners schooner leads the Sooners onto the field tipped over and lost a couple of wheels. Literally, the wheels came off, but fortunately,
I don't think anybody was hurt.
Yeah, fortunately, no one was hurt. Unfortunately, that was not an omen for Oklahoma fans of what was going to happen in that ball game, because Jalen Hurts, I think he accounted for something like five or maybe six touchdowns and over 400 yards of offense, and he was nearly perfect in the passing game, 16 out of 17 for more than 300 yards.
Yeah, I saw that, and my initial reaction was, oh, my God, I hope everybody's okay, and then I laughed my ass off.
And then I know earlier we talked about that Boise State BYU game, but out west, much has been made of the Pac-12 and how the Pac-12 has not had a playoff team. And so the fact that Oregon was able to take care of business, rally from two touchdowns down up in Seattle, is awesome for that in that conference. And they kept their hopes of maybe sneaking into the playoff alive.
Yeah, we talked about that. The Auburn loss at the beginning of the season, they've just rattled off how many wins in a row. I mean, so like, was it five or six? So nice job by them. I think it's five wins in a row.
Yeah, something like that.
And so
maybe
in the South Division, USC, they've lost a couple close ball games, a pair of 30-27 games at BYU and at Notre Dame. But they're 4-3, but 3-1 in the Pac-12. So here, I know, 2 or 3 weeks from now, something like that, Oregon has to go to the Coliseum. So remember that one.
Yeah.
And we were talking about the Wisconsin. I want to mention this too, guys. Next, Wisconsin losing to Illinois. Well, next week at high noon on Fox, they're going to have Wisconsin, Ohio State. So that's a, maybe they were overlooking the game, but
oh yeah, absolutely. That's exactly
that's going to be a tough. That's going to be a tough game to win at the Horseshoe.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what happened. Wisconsin was looking ahead to Ohio State, obviously.
All right, and what, Bubba, this week, I know we've got a big week on the podcast. Before we go, I know we want to produce some promoting.
Yep, we'll be catching up with former Pirate tailback Willie Lewis, and Willie was a Pirate from 1985 to 1989, so he was there in the Art Baker era in the first year of Bill Lewis. So we'll enjoy catching up with Willie, and Willie's going to be at the USF game, so wanted to have him on, and I know he said he's really looking forward to it.
Sounds good. I have some other guests as well that we're working on right now behind the scenes, so they'll be surprises to all of us. So appreciate it very much. We'll try to have Terry Gallagher on next week. I know he couldn't make it there. He's probably watching the race, guys, so we can't involve the race. So he's always watching the race or whatever, but look forward to having Bunk on next week. And, guys, looking forward to a big game. Hopefully everybody will get out there at 3:45 on Saturday for homecoming. It's going to be a great one. We'll have our preview and so much more. So stay with us for that. For Kyle from McGrain's Barber and Bubba Rosenbaum, I am Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.